Hey there, welcome to LSAT Demon Daily Digest. I'm Ben Olson, that's Nathan Fox. Together we're the founders of LSATdemon.com and our weekly podcast, Thinking LSAT. Here's what we talked about this week.
We have an email here from Peter.
Hey Ben and Nathan, I'm a middle school math teacher who is just starting to think seriously about law school admissions. I'm not even 100% committed to going to law school, but I've been at it on the Demon for about 2 weeks. My thinking is that I'll prep hard for the LSAT on your basic plan for now, take the test, and see what my options would be in terms of where I could go and how much money I could get. I'm under the impression that law school is only really worth it if you can go to a decent to good school for free or pretty close to it. A bunch of schools just have just abysmal median debt to median salary ratios, and those numbers make me hyper aware of getting swindled by law schools. The catch is that after 2 weeks on the Demon, I took a practice test and got a 175. Wow. Okay. Nice work. I missed 3 logic game questions and 2 reading comp questions. So you aced logical reasoning. Nice work. I was pretty surprised, and I know there's a lot of statistical noise in practice tests, but I don't think it was a total fluke either. No, you can't totally fluke up to 175.
Yeah. That's the odds are so wildly against that that it's just, we can assume that it's impossible to do that by accident or by random chance.
Yeah, there is some variation, obviously, but not that much. I could tell you why all of my right answers are right. Yes, this is one practice test, but it is a is it dumb for this to change how I think about law school?
No.
No, you're on. This is great news. Keep going. I have a 3.9 UGPA and would apply in September 2023 at the earliest. So I think it's reasonable to expect my score to be pretty high by then. Yeah, it's already high. Basically, my options will probably be better than I originally envisioned. I think I could be at least competitive for the top five schools, yeah. And this makes me feel like I almost have to go to law school, that the opportunity would be too good to pass up. No. Necessarily.
Definitely not. You have a lot of aptitude for this. Do you have interest in this? Like, do you actually want to spend your life doing lawyer shit?
Yeah. Imagine something really, really painful that Harvard teaches or trains people to do. Like, oh, I could go to Harvard and do what? I don't know, marine biology, and you just have no interest whatsoever in marine animals or being out on the ocean or getting sick on a boat. Why would you do that, even if you could go to Harvard? Law is 10 times worse, by the way. And this makes me feel like, okay, wait, hold on. I guess what I'm asking is whether the type of school you can go to should affect your decision to go to law school in the first place, or if you should only go when you are certain that you want a career practicing law. Super fucking unsympathetic problem, I know, but I would like to hear your thoughts on the situation. Thanks, Peter. Yes, absolutely. Make sure you're going in the right direction and not being pulled into a career that is going to provide you no value. If you have the chops to get a 175 on the LSAT, then you have the chops to get a very high score and pursue another program that is more interesting to you, or just forget about school and start your own company or do whatever the fuck you want. You said super fucking unsympathetic problem. I know. Yes. Do whatever the fuck you want. You have the skills to do it.
Yeah. You got to figure out what you want to do. The fact that law school, I mean, you have so much aptitude that it's going to be easy for you to take the LSAT, crush it. I mean, if you take another practice test or two and you score solidly in the 170s, you should go ahead and register for an official test. Yeah, and you should just start taking the official test. And when you have your 175 or higher on record, you can just go, cool, scoreboard, done with that. But then it's a totally separate decision whether you actually want to spend your life practicing law. I mean, is it the best, highest use of your abilities? Or could you go cure cancer?
Yeah. go to med school. Who knows? I wouldn't want to do that, but maybe that's more up your alley. You have to figure out what you really want.
Start a business, start a nonprofit. You know, there's so many ways that you could contribute to the world. You're already teaching middle school math. I mean, you could be changing kids' lives every single day as a middle school math teacher.
Maybe you take the problems that middle school math teachers face and you make an app that solves those problems.
Yeah. I mean, if you're only thinking about doing this because of money, I just don't think that there's better ways to make money.
Yep.
That really, like, that this goes for everyone, like literally everyone who's listening. If you think you're doing the law path because you want to make, because it's a good career that will make money, that's a terrible reason to go down this path.
Well, because you're not going to make that much money even when you are at the best.
Well, you could make $220,000 starting salary as a big law lawyer. And if you are in the small margin of people who work their way up the pyramid, you know, the pyramid scheme that is the big law firm, you could end up making multi-millions. Or if you start your own, you know, strike out on your own small practice, you could make multi-millions. But most people who become lawyers, they do it because they don't want to be entrepreneurs. But law school partners are entrepreneurs. They are lawyers first. They know what it, they're willing to grind it out in the battlefield of law. They're willing to work outrageous hours in a super high stress, super tedious, but also super high stakes, high stress environment. And they're willing to go out and find new business. Those are the people who really get paid in law.
Yeah. Well, I guess my concern is that even people who end up doing the best, they go to some of the best schools and they do well in school and they have the potential to follow that path. The problem with talking about that path or even thinking about it is that there are so many people who are, even if they're on that path, and you're highly unlikely to get on that path. But even if you get on that path, there are tons of people who peel off, right? They don't make it. They go in-house and now you're going back to $150,000 a year or $180,000 a year. And it's like, okay, cool. But you really came into this to try to get that gold. And now you're not anywhere close to millions per year.
So I'm going to look up, I'm going to see if I can find it. The reason why law school partners make the kind of outrageous money they make is on the backs of all of the people who think they're going to become law school partners.
Law firm partners. Yeah.
Law firm partners. My bad. Law firm partners.
Yeah.
It's a pyramid scheme. And mm-hmm. So everybody goes into the firm. Yes, they make good starting salaries, but they work 80 hours a week. And most people don't survive. The ones who do survive end up reaping the profits that are generated from all of those young attorneys.
Yeah.
And that's the only way to make like really big money in law.
And that's if you're even in that path. And so many people are not even anywhere close to that. They're not going to the right school to even get in a big law job. And if they do, they're still at the bottom of the class or the middle of the class, and that's not enough to get a big law job. So now they're making 60 grand a year starting with a horrible amount of debt. It's
not a good way to try to make money. I mean, nope. So what is it good for? It's good for people who have a burning desire to practice law for the rest of their life.
Yep.
You have to love the work. You have to really want to do it. You have to want to be a knight of the English language. You have to want to be an advocate. You have to want to battle it out every day, mostly in writing. And you've got to want to practice law. If you don't have that burning desire to do the actual work that lawyers do, it's very fulfilling for the people that it's fulfilling for.
And that's why they rise up.
Yeah. And right. Ironically, those are the ones who end up making the money.
Yep.
I want to encourage Peter to find, I found it right away. The search term is, well, I'll give you the title of this Vanderbilt Law Review article from 1999 called On Being a Happy, Healthy, and Ethical Member of an Unhappy, Unhealthy, and Unethical Profession.
Yep.
This was published in the Vanderbilt Actual Law School Law Review by Professor Patrick J. Schlitz, who also was a judge. He was a law firm partner, a law professor, and a judge. And again, the title is On Being a Happy, Healthy, and Ethical Member of an Unhappy, Unhealthy, and Unethical Profession. And I read the entire Law Review article. I thought that it was excellent. You can find it available freely online. You should definitely read that, Peter, before you go any farther down this road, because I know that what Professor or Judge Schlitz would tell you is, I don't care how much aptitude you have. Like, aptitude is necessary, but not sufficient. And, you know, you've got to just realize what kind of a world you're getting yourself into before you go any further down this road, because you've got the talent that you could do a million things. Is this the thing that really is the best fit for you? Hey, Ben and Nathan, I have a slight problem. I began my sophomore year last year at a large university on the East Coast. I decided to join my university's pre-law organization. About a month into the semester, our pre-law club had a guest speaker from Kaplan come and talk about the LSAT. Accompanying the guest speaker was a student ambassador from my university. They pitched a $2,000 LSAT course that they said would basically guarantee me a higher score. I knew I would never...
To be clear, a higher score means you're going from a 154 to a 155, and they say, yeah, job done.
Or okay. Sometimes they have that Princeton Review. Remember how Princeton Review had that 7-point guarantee that they were all proud of themselves about?
Oh, yeah, I don't remember that. But you also, if you don't achieve that, well, you failed in our book anyway, but... they're going to make you show that you did certain homework assignments and stuff. It's weird.
Yeah.
It's a weird world.
You have to have showed up to every single class session and you have to have done every single homework assignment.
Yeah.
It's like you have to have spent hundreds of hours not improving and then they give you the guarantee. Oh, also, I mean, Anonymous here is saying
you have to take it officially too. Sorry. Anyways.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And take the official test and not improve. It's like not enough to just, no, my practice test scores aren't improving. Meanwhile, we're like, well, then don't take the official test. They're like, oh, well, if you want your refund, then you have to take the official test and suck at it. Brutal. Just brutal. I mean, Anonymous also says that Kaplan was saying they said would basically guarantee me a higher score. Okay. So in other words, not actually a guarantee. Okay. Anyway. I knew I would never be able to afford the course they pitched, but there was still hope. At the very end of the presentation, the student ambassador said they were looking for other student ambassadors at my university. It's like Amway.
Oh my gosh.
It is. Not only do student ambassadors get paid to give presentations and share Kaplan resources, but they get their very own Kaplan course. I took the opportunity and applied for the job, and I was quickly hired. I started researching all things LSAT and found your podcast around the same time I started my Kaplan course. Fast forward to today, and my experience with Kaplan has been terrible. My teacher reminds me of one of my substitute teachers from middle school. He tells us to do logical reasoning questions 1 through 10 and then skip ahead to the very last question and work your way backward from there.
What? Why?
We are also supposed to skip every parallel reasoning question along the way, read the question stem first, and diagram during both logical reasoning and reading comprehension.
Oh, geez. Wow, they really just want to like find all the bad advice and give it to you. Like, here's what not to do. Let's tell you what not to do and pretend it's what you should do.
Yeah, don't do any of that. I mean, that's all terrible advice that you're learning from your $2,000 Kaplan class. Thankfully, I found the demon and I enrolled in Demon Live. It feels kind of badass to be a double agent. Nevertheless, I am employed with Kaplan and I am supposed to sell an LSAT course that I now know firsthand is inferior. What should I do? I don't think I can quit because I serve as the link between my pre-law club and Kaplan, so my peers are relying on me to get them discounts and free resources.
Okay, that is the reason to quit. You are the means by which you are pushing an inferior course, and those are your words.
Yeah, it's like the discounts and free resources, it's discounts to a bad, overpriced thing and free resources that hurt rather than help. So you're the problem. I mean, you're like,
but you're Kaplan's complicit. The problem, but you're perpetuating it. Yeah,
you're part of the problem. Like, it's not a benefit to your pre-law club that you continue this role. So if you quit and the link is now severed between your pre-law club and Kaplan, you are doing your peers a service.
Yeah, especially if you tell them why you're quitting. I quit because this is not good. Don't do it. It's a win for everybody.
Yeah, I mean, you should read this email in your pre-law club. Like, you're not the right kind of, this is not badass to be a double agent of this sort. You're like still selling the thing that you know is shit. You're standing up there with the Kaplan representative, handing out their materials, and yeah, coupon, $500 off of a $2,000 class. Meanwhile, you're actually paying us $295 a month to do what you know is better.
Yeah, think about it this way. You're directing people to advice that is bad. That is different from directing people to advice that's maybe good but incomplete. Right. It would be more effective to get the whole story, but they're only getting some good advice. No, they're getting bad advice. So they're paying money to be harmed. I don't know how else to say it.
Yeah, it wouldn't be worth it if it was free. It doesn't help. It actually hurts people.
Yeah.
We have so many people who tell us, I started with 160. I took Kaplan. I was then scoring 157.
Or worse.
Yeah, it's like, all of these convoluted ways that they teach it, it's bad. It hurts. It doesn't help. They're a marketing company. They're not good at teaching. Like, in your own email, they have bad strategies and bad teachers.
Sorry. So you got into this predicament. But thankfully, the solution is pretty straightforward. Quit and focus on your LSAT score.
We've got another anonymous email here.
Hey, guys. I've been studying for a month now. My diagnostic score was a heartbreaking 145.
That's not heartbreaking.
Nope, it's totally normal. Why is that
heartbreaking? Yeah, nope. It's a totally normal score. And yep. Even if it wasn't, even if it was 125, I still don't think that should be heartbreaking. That's just whatever. It's who cares? No one cares.
Could be liberating. Huh. Don't pursue this course.
Right.
This person continues, I've improved a lot since then. Here is how I did on my timed sections this week. -2 in games, -4 in reading comp, and -3 in logical reasoning.
Jeez, that's like a 170.
Yeah, nice work. I don't want to burn out, so I've been avoiding full practice tests. I don't think you'll burn out. Are full practice tests necessary? A law student told me that they weren't, but I thought it would be better to ask you guys. Also, should I take the 3 or 4 section practice tests? Sorry, should I take the 3 or the 4 section practice tests? Which one? How many should I aim to take before my test date? I'd like you to take the practice test before your test date. I mean, I guess you've taken at least one. You got your diagnostic. But you're scoring so high, I wouldn't freak out about the practice test. You probably need to take them. You don't need to take them, but maybe you need to take them because you're so concerned about them. They're not a big deal. Take one a week. No big deal.
If you're doing it with normal time, 35 minutes a section, I mean,
yep.
Normal time is 35 minutes a section, 4 sections, only one of them doesn't count. That's the experimental section. But there's going to be one LG that counts, one reading comp that counts, one LR that counts, and then one additional of any of the three types where they're testing out future questions. But 4 times 35 minutes plus a 10-minute break in between section 2 and section 3, that all adds up to 2.5 hours.
You got this.
You better don't not over burn out after 2.5 hours worth of easy, fun work. I mean, you're doing well. You're figuring out the questions.
Yeah. That may not be true for someone else. If you're scoring in the 150s, yeah, you should focus most of your time on drilling and practice sections because you need the time to review after you're done with those sections or section, really. Here, you're scoring so highly that you can review your questions after a full test and still have time to go hang out and play golf.
At 165 or whatever you're at right now, mm-hmm. Yeah, one a week, one every other week. Something like that. Don't make it into some big, stressful, dramatic thing. It becomes a stressful, dramatic thing if you never, ever do it. So do it sometimes and get used to it's nothing.
Yep. And here, you also sound like you're overthinking the 3 or 4 section thing. Make that decision based on how much time you have that day. If you still can't decide, roll a dice and do whichever is closer to 3 or 4. That's how much it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Just do a test. I don't care.
Yeah, it really doesn't matter. What matters is understanding one more question at a time. Hey, since you mentioned golf, can I'll extend a golf analogy here. I always walk, you know, I never ride in the golf cart. I always walk. Mm. And these dudes that I play with are like, you're going to walk and carry your clubs? The whole 18? Really?
Do you know our ancestors? All of our ancestors walked everywhere. They avoided the ice age by walking down to.
Yeah. It's just ridiculous because it's a perfect example of I do it all the time. I always do it. And it's nothing because I always do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like I'll show up for the afternoon tea time and the guys are like, you're going to walk the whole 18 and carry your. It makes me tired even looking at you doing it. And I'm like, well, you know, they're like, well, you're going to take a cart on the back 9, right? And I'm like, no, I'm planning on walking the whole 18. You're going to walk the whole 18. And then I'm like, I'll blow their mind sometime because I'm like, well, I also walked the whole 18 this morning at the other golf course that I played. So I was figuring I'd probably just keep walking this 18.
Yeah.
It's walking, dude. What? How hard is it? It's
That's so good for you too. It's low impact. It reduces cortisol. Man.
It's nothing. It's so easy. And anyway, doing a practice test, whether 3 sections or 4 sections, it's 1/4 of a work day for a lawyer or for a law student.
Yep.
It's nothing. Stop worrying about it. The best way to stop worrying about it is to just do it sometimes.
We have an email here from Andrew.
Hi, Ben and Nathan. I found your podcast on Spotify 2 weeks ago, and now I'm a premium subscriber trying to drink the Kool-Aid. I'm 22 years old and graduated from college last December with a 3.47 GPA and a degree in mathematics with a concentration in business. Because this is a pretty uncommon major for law school applicants, I'd like to add that I got A's and A minuses throughout my major and non-major writing courses, comma, splice. I'm good at reading for understanding, average paced though, comma, and enjoy both.
Can we stop there? I don't care about your grades in writing. In fact, your grades in math are much more impressive than your grades in writing. People who go to law school, yeah, they tend to have these English, these humanities backgrounds, but that's a tendency. And in fact, those who have math or engineering or physics or whatever look way more attractive to law schools. So math is harder. That's a good thing for going to law school.
I took the October 2021 exam and scored a 153. Yeah, so we would expect higher for a math major. That's a bummer that you took the official test and only got a 153. I think you did shitty prep. Let's see what you say. As prep, I read the LSAT trainer, took a few months off. then took timed sections, practice tests, and did review. Unsurprisingly, now at least, I experienced score stagnation in the latter months around the mid to high 150s mark. I suppose I didn't really know how to study and review efficiently, made mistakes in my schedule, and just focused way too much on timing. I'm now considering getting a note from my doctor to allow accommodations for ADHD, anxiety, and depression.
Okay, well, don't worry about all that. I mean, we have to stumble and fall as we learn not only the test itself, but also how to study and how to learn about these things. And your path led you to the demon. You're on the right path now. Just keep learning. I'm sure there's things you're doing now that aren't as effective as they could be, but every day you'll learn something new and you'll get better and better at studying, which will also mean you'll get better at the test. So yeah, okay.
Since graduation, I've been working in corporate America, and trust me, I regret just now getting back into studying. In a perfect world, though, I would work hard and take this October or November's test or both so I could apply this cycle.
No, that's not a perfect world. A perfect world is you would focus on getting the best score you can possibly get, whether that's in October, November, January, February, March, April, I don't know. Get the best score on record and then apply early next cycle. You're already late.
Yep, you're too late for this cycle. You haven't been studying properly. You're a premium subscriber now for the Demon, which is great, but do not. You're not following our advice, Andrew, if you take October or November and apply this cycle. That is explicitly against our recommendation. So just if you trust us, if you believe that we want what's actually best for you, then you're not going to apply this cycle. You're going to take the test four more times.
Yep.
And you're going to apply in September of 2023 with the very best LSAT you can get. I would like to get your opinion, Andrew says, in respect of my GPA, time frames, studying, accommodations, etc., as my goal is the 170s. Update: yesterday, I got 6 out of 7 correct on a 3 out of 5 difficulty RC section!
RC passage, probably. Okay. Congrats. That's great. Figure out what you did wrong with that one question.
Yeah, I mean, Andrew, I got it. So it's, Ben is nice. Ben says that's great. It's not great. 6 out of 7 is not something to celebrate. I mean, it might be if you were scoring 125 and just trying to get to having any understanding of the test, but your goal is in the 170s. You don't get in the 170s by getting 6 out of 7. You get 170s by getting 7 out of 7. So, you know, and not just on the 3 out of 5 difficulty, but on the hardest passages, you're going to get 7 out of 7 if you're going to score in the 170s. And the reason why I'm beating you up about this, Andrew, is because there's a very specific lesson here, which you obviously have not yet learned. You continue to focus so much on the timing that you think rushing through it and getting 6 out of 7 is good. That's how you stagnate in the 150s. You need to stop thinking about the time completely. You need to focus only on getting every single question right. You have to solve the questions, not race through the passages or not race through the sections. You got to be a little bit, you got to just have higher standards. I mean, you said, you acknowledge that you focused way too much on timing. Well, if you focus at all on timing, that's way too much. You need to focus only on actually understanding one question at a time. If you're entitled to these accommodations, by all means, get the accommodations. They're really easy to get. They're very powerful. You can get 53 minutes or 70 minutes if that's what you want. You can get those accommodations, but don't sell yourself short, Andrew, and think that like the accommodations are necessary for you to get in the 170s. I think, you know, you're a math major. You're like probably really fucking smart. You're used to solving things. You need to treat the LSAT as something that can be solved. That's absolutely the thing you're missing right now.
But also don't let that be a like an unnecessarily imposed challenge or hurdle to you, and then you decide not to get accommodations. If you can get accommodations, get them and kick ass. Do the best you possibly can. Understand this 100%. Yeah. I just don't want them to walk away and think, oh, well, I'm math, so therefore I don't need the accommodations and therefore I'm not going to get them. If you can get them, I don't care whether you need them or not. Get them.
Just don't get them as an excuse for like not actually understanding. I mean, if you get these accommodations, you should score like 178.
Yep. That's your new goal.
Yeah. And time frames wise, you have to give up on the idea that you're applying this cycle. You're going to apply next cycle. You're going to study a little bit every day. You've got a job. Keep the job. Keep making money. Keep saving money. And study, you know, one high quality hour every single day. When your practice tests are reliable in the 170s, then you start taking official tests. Don't register for October or November until you're happy with your practice test scores. You've got plenty of chances at it between now and next September. Do this the right way, Andrew. Don't settle. Don't sell yourself short.
You got this.
We have an email here. Looks like it's anonymous.
Okay. Hey, hi, Nathan and Ben. I hope you two can provide insight into my law school chances and potential solutions to my quandary. I failed community college 15 years ago. I returned to school 3 years ago and have since excelled. I received academic renewal to remove 10 Fs from 15 years ago. Since returning to school, I've received all A's and 1 B+. If I receive an A in my last two classes, I will graduate in December with a 3.969. Currently, my GPA is 3.926. My transcript looks like two completely different people. LSAC has calculated my GPA at 2.4. Yikes. I reached out to my community college about potential solutions, but they seem unreceptive to any change. Yeah, we don't want you to succeed. Okay, that sucks. They mentioned that my transcript needs to be a complete, true record of my academic career. I pled with the director of admissions to no avail. Not sure if this matters, but the community college is Pasadena City College in Southern California. I appreciate your time.
If you've done everything you can do with that school, then you've done everything you can do with that school. Why are you pleading with the director of admissions, by the way?
Yeah, it seems like someone else in charge of like bookkeeping.
The registrar or something. Like, can you get a professor to advocate your side? Yeah. Have you explained it? Because like if you're in there and you might like, you might be talking to the wrong person anyway, but you in there doesn't carry nearly as much weight as potentially the dean of the department, you know, or what about the people who are in charge of this academic renewal program? Yeah. That's not the admissions office. You know, why don't you go talk to the academic renewal people and say, hey, I was under the impression that I was in academic renewal, but now what does that actually mean? I mean, it's almost like you have a fraud case against them.
Fraud?
Well, hey, can't you make the argument? I mean, I'm not saying that you should sue these people, but what I'm saying is part of the reason probably why they even have academic renewal is because it's like, oh, I've done so shitty, I'm just going to give up on school.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, well, no, you know, they're trying to keep you in the fold with academic renewal.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, you can actually graduate with a great GPA.
Yeah.
So they're making these representations to you about what academic renewal actually means. You've now found out that their academic renewal program doesn't actually mean that, at least not where it really matters, which is in your law school admissions.
Mm-hmm.
So what if you go talk to, I would talk to professors who gave you A's. You know, if you know any department heads, chairs, deans, those types of people, I would talk to them. I would explain your conundrum to them and see if you can get somebody to be your advocate.
Yeah.
And maybe you can go build a case especially, you know, or maybe there's somebody in the academic renewal program who will be sympathetic to this and they'll actually, because I have a feeling that like this person in admissions just might not even understand what you're trying to say.
They can't do anything about it. And so they're just saying no anyway. No. Sorry.
We yeah. And then like kind of patting you on the head. I can see them being really patronizing, you know, that line about like, well, I mean, it needs to be a real record of what you did yeah. here, of your academic, yeah. you know, it's like, hey, listen, fucker. What is the point of academic renewal if my transcript needs to be a complete true record of my academic career? Mm-hmm. I would not give up on that. It's like a lawyer, right? Like a lawyer is not going to just take the first no. A lawyer is going to go around and make sure that everybody is giving you a no.
And once you do the most you can with that, get the best LSAT score you can on record so that you can become that diamond in the rough, right? They're looking at your application. Maybe you can't get your GPA up as high as you'd like, but you can show them the 3.969 with a high LSAT score, and they're going to say, ah, here's an actually good candidate. Their GPA just doesn't reflect that, but we can pick them up on the cheap.
I would do that regardless. You know, yeah. I mean, you need the best LSAT, whether you're a 2.4 or a 3.9, you need the best LSAT you can get. So absolutely. But I wouldn't give up on getting this fixed because you were in. I mean, so think about that, Ben, like from again, I'm not saying actually sue them, but from a lawyer standpoint, you have evidence. You were enrolled in whatever this academic renewal program is. Mm-hmm. They might have made certain representations to you that you were going to be able to clean up your academic record. And I would look at the documents that they sent you, whatever the documentation is for this whole program. I would really hammer that until every single person there tells you, no, we absolutely cannot do this for you.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like, think about how that looks if you start tweeting about it or putting it on Instagram or whatever, like, you know, like, here's what academic renewal actually does at Pasadena City College. That looks really shitty for them. I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying go in there and threaten them, but I am saying, like, I would keep asking the questions over and over and over and explain to them why they should do this for you. I also might try LSAC.
Absolutely.
If you haven't yet tried LSAC, you know, you explain to LSAC that you were in academic renewal. You explain to them that you've gone through this whole thing with Pasadena City College and that their academic, you know, it was like some scam academic renewal program where they didn't actually renew your transcript the way they told you they would. Who knows? I mean, maybe you find somebody sympathetic at LSAC who's able to just like uncheck some boxes, you know, like, oh yeah, don't count that grade. Don't count that grade. Don't count that grade. Don't count that grade. Boom. Recalculate.
That would be amazing.
It's possible. We have heard of people getting various kinds of concessions.
Yeah.
Give it a shot. Email daily at LSATdemon.com if you'd like to ask us a question or share some LSAT or law school admissions news. Thanks for listening.